minutes ago. I'm looking real good in my passport photo. Amateur Traveler, episode 806. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about mojitos and the Malecon, fortresses and floor shows, plazas and playas, as we go to the capital city of Cuba, Havana. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Havana. I'd like to welcome back to the show Talek Nantes from TravelsWithTalek.com. If the name sounds familiar, she's been on the show recently talking about Patagonia, but this time we're heading to Cuba and more specifically Havana. Talek, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, and what is your connection with Havana and with Cuba in general?
Okay, my family came from Cuba in the 50s, mm-hmm. and we landed in New York City and became American citizens. Well, I was born, actually my mother was pregnant with me when she came to the United States. I was born in New York. My entire family's from Cuba, and I married a Cuban who came to this country, to the United States in the 60s during the Great Migration for political reasons. And I traveled to Cuba back and forth, had family there up until recently. I love it. It's beautiful. I love the music, the people, the nature. I can go on and on, and I will go on and on.
And the which time is why that you're we here. Have here.
So that's my connection.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Havana?
Well, Havana is the capital of Cuba. People mm-hmm. think of Cuba. Sometimes all they think about is Havana. It's actually many other cities. Havana is fascinating for many reasons. One, it is a colonial city. It was founded in 1519 by the Spaniards who came over looking for gold and, I'm not going to say a better life, the way the Americans think of it, that you left for economic reasons. They pretty much came looking for gold. And they found silver, and Havana became a major trading port. Mm-hmm. It was extremely important in the 1500s, 1600s. It was a big slave trade port, unfortunately. Also, all of the precious metals and things like cocoa and so forth and came from places like Peru, Mexico, Colombia. They all congregated in Havana. That was the transfer point. Mm-hmm. to go back to Spain. So it was the most important, it was the jewel in the crown of the Spanish Empire, which at that time was an empire where the sun never set because they had colonies everywhere from the Philippines to the Americas to all over, really. Why is it important? Why should someone visit it? It's from the historical aspects. I think that for Americans, one of the main reasons is that Havana and Cuba itself have been forbidden fruit since the embargo in 1962. And it was impossible for many, many years or extremely difficult for Americans to travel there. During the Obama era, it became a little bit easier. During the Trump era, it became more restricted. Now, most recently, just a couple of days ago, it became less restrictive. So Americans can go. They don't know that. Most Americans do not know that they can go to Cuba. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Cuba, and they say, oh, but Americans can't go, right? They don't know. And
right.
There is no encouragement from the government, certainly, or anywhere else for people to go to Cuba. But yes, you can go as an American. Why you should go is because it's beautiful. And from the historical aspect, the architecture of Cuba, of Havana particularly, mm-hmm. is very colonial. In some cases, it's been untouched, literally, from the day that it was built. The Baroque cathedral, the seawalk, which is called the Malecón, mm-hmm. the fortifications, which are one of Havana's, I believe they have 7 UNESCO World Heritage Sites. All of the massive fortifications are a marvel of military engineering. All of those things you cannot see anywhere else. Because of the embargo, this doesn't exist. The situation that you see in a place like Havana does not exist anywhere else on the planet, just in that area. So there is no McDonald's, again, because of the situation with the United States and the embargo. There's no McDonald's, there's no Burger King, there's no fast food. There's very little new construction. The cars that you see are from the 50s. They're classic American cars. So those are the taxis. A lot of people don't own their own cars. It's just not, you know, something that happens in Cuba. But you do see a lot of rental cars. And it's like walking down the street of a colonial city in the 1950s. Hmm. It really is a step back in time. So you can't see that anywhere else. I mean, you can go to places that have colonial architecture, like Cartagena in Colombia, St. Augustine in Florida. To some extent, a lot of that has been Disney-ized. It's not the authentic. But what you see in Havana is the real thing. So I think that's the main reason that people should go there. You'll have a unique experience. And it's very, very beautiful. You'll stand in front of some of these mansions and you'll go, oh my God, you know. Or how was this built in the 1500s? It's an amazing place. Lots of music.
Let's start jumping into the itinerary then, and in terms of what we should do while we're there. And I think music is going to be one of them. So we'll get to that when we get to that on your list. What should we do when we go to Havana? How are we going to start?
Okay, well, we would land at Jose Marti Airport. Jose Marti is to Cubans what George Washington is to Americans. He's the founder of the country, a great statesman. And he died seeking freedom from Spain during the Cuban Revolution. So the airport is named after him. So you get off and you head straight into Old Havana. You can take a taxi. It will cost you about $30. The first thing that people should do in Havana is to enjoy the colonial architecture. How do you do that? There are four main plazas in the city. Mm-hmm. Well, one of them is the Plaza of the Cathedral, where you'll see this incredible cathedral in a Baroque architecture design dating from 1777, surrounded by former colonial government buildings where the governor of Cuba stayed when the Spanish were in power. By the way, the Spanish were in power in Cuba until 1890. So that's a beautiful plaza right there. It's just spectacular. Then another one that is very pretty is called the Plaza de Armas. Armas means weaponry. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's where they stored the weaponry. Good guess. I don't know. Could be. And that place is where the city was originally founded in 1519. So there is actually a tree there that is said to be a tree that was there when the Spaniards arrived. That's also a very beautiful plaza, and it's got a garden in the middle of it and is surrounded by little museums. And one of my favorite museums is in that plaza. It is called the Museum of the Captains General. And it is a reproduction of what a colonial house was like, of high-class people, like the back in colonial times. And even the dishes are authentic to that period. It's very interesting. You just imagine yourself living in a place like that. It's just fantastic. With a lot of interior patios. It's an architectural concept that the Spaniards got from the Moors, because the Moors were in control in Spain for like 700 years. Until 1492, when Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand kicked out the last of them. There's another plaza called Plaza Vieja, which translates into Old
the
Plaza.
The Old Square.
Mm-hmm. Old Square. And this used to be a slave trading point. So they would bring the slaves in, and you know what goes on in a situation like that. Today, it has been recently renovated, and it is surrounded by these beautiful little cafes. There's a brewery on one corner, which makes actually pretty good beer. Nice little restaurants, beautiful little cafes, vendors going up and down with selling coconut ice cream. It's a very, very pleasant place to spend some time. And you go there late at night, and there's wandering musicians playing all over the place. And also you can stay in little hotels or bed and breakfasts, actually, surrounding that plaza. So it's a beautiful, beautiful venue. Then the fourth one is the Plaza of San Francisco, where there is San Francisco Church, which is the original, hasn't been touched since it was built. Today it's a museum, it's converted, and there's a beautiful white marble fountain in the middle of the place, And this is where Cubans go to celebrate family events, a wedding. You have to go to Plaza de San Francisco to get your picture taken there. Or in the United States, you have Sweet 16.
Sure.
In Latin culture, you have Sweet 15.
Right, so, quinceañera.
Quinceañeros. So they all quinceañeros go there. So when you're walking around and you're seeing people in the little tulle pink dresses and the little hats. And it's
they'd be more likely on the weekend, I assume?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're there all the time. All of this area here that I'm describing is called Old Havana, and it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Mm-hmm. It's a big tourist area, so it's pretty lively throughout. Now, of course, if you're a Cuban and you're going to have a party, you're going to have it on the weekend. So that's when you'll see the families taking pictures there. But other than that, it's very, very busy. And this particular plaza is surrounded by higher-end restaurants.
Okay.
And hotels. So it's going to cost you a lot more to stay in one of those places than it would in other parts of Old Havana.
When you say a lot more, how much is a lot more in Havana? Okay.
Well, there's the Kempinski, the Meliá. Those places will go for $400, $500 a night.
Okay. All right. That's a lot more.
Now, Americans are not allowed to stay in those hotels. There is a list of hotels, and you'll find that in the U.S. State Department about Cuba, the section that they have on Cuba, so you can just go online and find it. There's a list of hotels, a very, very long list of hotels that Americans cannot frequent or that Americans cannot spend money at. You can walk in and out. You just can't spend money per the U.S. government. The Cubans don't care. Frankly, the U.S. government doesn't care either, because there's no American walking behind you when you're in the streets of Havana to see if you go into the restaurant or to see if you buy a Coke at the bar or not. Nobody really cares, but that is the law.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's about $400, $500 in some of the higher-end places.
Okay.
But they're really beautiful.
Well, it used to be a real playground for the rich, you know, of the U.S. before, you know, Castro,
the 50s. Frank
fall
Sinatra
to communism.
Used to go there a lot.
Yeah.
By the way, the reason that the U.S. government says to Americans you cannot go spend money there is because all of these hotels
are owned by the government.
Are owned by the government.
Yeah.
So Hotel Nacional is one of those places that are owned by the government. And that one is where those actors and, you know, famous artists would go. Mm-hmm. All of these celebrities would go to that particular hotel. So when you go there, you'll see pictures of them all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And they really put the place on the map. But what started to put Havana on the map was the fact that in Prohibition in the United States, when people wanted to drink and party, they would go to Havana. So
It is not that far away from the U.S.
No, it's 90 miles from Key West, and it takes me an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and 30 minutes, thereabouts, an hour and 10 minutes. That's from Miami to Havana, that's about as long as it takes. And from New York City, it's about a three-hour flight, three and a half hours. But you're right there.
Right.
And in fact, I remember before the revolution, which started in 1959 and really got going in the early 60s, my family would take the car, and that they would drive down to, I don't remember where they took the ferry, but they would take a ferry into Havana with their car and drive around and then come back. So that was back then in the early 50s.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we've gone the first day, and we've gone to some of these historic plazas. Is there anything else we're going to do that first day?
Well, for that night, if you've got the energy, there's Havana is as famous for nightlife today as it was in the 50s.
Okay.
And there's many, many places to go to. There's one, if you like jazz, there is a place called, which means the Fox and the Crow, and that is a jazz club, which is on 23rd Street. Which everybody knows. Saying 23rd Street in Havana is like saying 5th Avenue in New York City. Everybody knows what you're talking about. So that's where this club is. And it opens at 10, and it's world-class jazz. Very, very nice venue. So that's one example of something that you could do during the night. But you know, your first day, you're probably going to be exhausted because there's a lot of walking. Havana is the perfect walkable city. All of those plazas that I mentioned, you can walk to them. And as you go there, you pass by the most interesting streets. So you're going to be very tired the first day. The second day, what you could do is to rent one of these old classic American cars and have them give you a tour around the city. That'll cost you about $35, $40 an hour.
So you're renting the car and the driver,
and the driver.
Like. Okay.
Yes, yes. And they'll take you wherever it is that you want to go. Most people will take it for like 2 hours. It's a really fun thing to do. Tremendous photo opportunity. Everybody takes their photographs in the car in front of the colonial buildings. It's just a very, very nice thing to do. Museums. Havana is a museum city. It has some of the most fabulous museums. The most important one is the Museum of Fine Arts, which, in my humble opinion, I know very little about art. It is world class, and I have seen stuff there that I've seen in the Met and I've seen in the Louvre, or types of things as good quality. It's a beautiful museum. It's in two parts. They've got the Cuban wing and the, I guess, the regular wing.
Okay.
I don't think it has a name. I forgot it. But the more interesting one is the Cuban wing. It has some beautiful, beautiful Cuban art. There's also the Napoleonic Museum, which contains the best collection of Napoleonic artifacts outside of France. Something else that you wouldn't believe.
Interesting.
I know, isn't it?
Why would that be in
Why would
in Havana?
That be? Yeah. That was going to be my next point. The guy that whose name I don't remember, who's no longer in Cuba, is one of these very, very wealthy people that left because of the revolution, was a Francophile, and he just decided, I'm going to collect all of this. He had the money to do this. I believe he was a sugar baron, and he did, and it's in a very nice house building that is also serves as a lecture hall. But it's got some beautiful architecture inside the building and then all of the artifacts. Very, very nice. Another wonderful museum is the Museum of the Revolution, if you're interested in the revolution. It's not as well kept as others, but it's important from a historical perspective if you happen to be there and if you happen to be interested in the revolution. And the revolution is in your face all the time that you're there. You'll be reminded of it constantly. And I'm trying to remember, Ernest Hemingway's house. Ernest Hemingway would live between Idaho, I think, and for years and years and years. And he had this beautiful, beautiful house on a mountaintop. It's called Casa Vigia. And that is the Hemingway Museum. It's been left exactly the way it was when he left it, I believe in the early 60s. So it's interesting. His typewriter is there, you know, his glasses. All of the furniture is there. He was a big hunter, so there's a lot of heads, taxidermy. It's just a very interesting place to see. A lot of his books are there as well. The Capitol building is a beautiful building on the main avenue of Havana. It looks very similar to the Capitol building of the United States. However, it was not designed following that design. Many people think that it was. And inside is worth visiting. It's another very interesting museum. Then they have a lot of quirky museums, such as the Tobacco Museum. And you can go in there and see the history of tobacco and watch people rolling tobaccos. They have the history of rum. Rum is very important in Cuba, and as is tobacco. And the Museum of Rum will take you through the whole process of rum. And at the end, you get free samples. And all of these people that were on the tour with you are your best friends at the end of this, because they give you some serious free samples there. They also have the Chocolate Museum. Chocolate is very, very important in Cuba. And there's a town in the far eastern regions called Baracoa, which specializes in chocolate. But they have these museums throughout Cuba, but this one in Havana is just on chocolate, how different ways of cooking chocolate, different samplings, hot chocolate, cold chocolate, chocolate figurines. So it's if you like the quirky little museums. They got the car museum, they got the train museum, a lot of quirky little museums floating around the city. Altogether, I counted once, I think there was 20 museums that you could say, okay, yeah, this is a museum. Oh, the Museum of Decorative Arts. there is a neighborhood right outside Havana called Veralo. It's where the very, very wealthy people lived before the revolution. And mm-hmm. when they left these houses. So many people moved into these houses, but some houses were maintained for artistic purposes and have turned into museums. So there's this one house owned by a very wealthy family, and if you go into the house, it's called the Museum of Decorative Arts, you see the house exactly like it was in the early 1950s, and how people lived, of that social class, how they lived. And boy, they lived very luxuriously.
Pretty well. Pretty well. Hence the revolution, yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Let's see. They also have another museum that's very interesting, the Museum of Santeria. Santeria is a religion, syncretic religion, that combines the African beliefs of the enslaved Africans that came over, that mm-hmm. were brought over forcibly into Cuba, and also Christianity. They couldn't practice their religion there openly, so they would incorporate these Christian symbols into the religion to make it look like, oh yeah, we're really going Christian, but they weren't. They were actually honoring their own deities. So this is a legitimate religion, and people practice it, and is widely practiced in Cuba, and the name of it is Santeria, which means related to the saints.
Okay.
And it's very interesting. And actually, this was taken up to the Supreme Court of the United States because there were some people practicing Santeria here in the United States. Somebody asked them to shut it down because they were too noisy or whatever. And they took it all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they said, no, these people are free to practice religion as it is. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. But that's just, frankly, it's just a sampling of the many museums that they have in Havana. So you could do that on your first, second, and third day. Another thing that you could do at night, because we already covered the jazz club,
right.
There is a place called the Cuban Art Factory, Fabrica de Arte Cubano, Cuban Art Factory, or the FAC in Spanish. And this place, I've never seen anything like this anywhere, and I've traveled quite a bit. This is mm-hmm. a venue. They took an abandoned cooking oil factory.
Okay.
With three floors, huge, and they turned it into an artistic venue. So you'll walk into this place, and there'll be a poetry reading in one corner. You walk a little bit more, and then there's an art exhibit. You walk into another room, and they're showing cinema. You walk into another room, and there's a dance performance of really talented people. Continue walking, and there's a restaurant, and there's a little snack bar over here. What else is there? There's a discotheque someplace else. There's a play going on elsewhere. There's various different art exhibits of very, very interesting art. And it's only $2. Well, most recently it was $2 to get in. And it opens up at 8 o'clock, but there's always a line like a mile long, so you have to get there early if you want to get in. And you don't use money. You only use money to get in. Whatever you buy, they give you a little card, and they clip it. And when you leave, you give them the card, and they tell you how much it is. The music was fabulous. The art was very, very interesting. The food was good. They have a nice, fancy restaurant on the rooftop.
Okay.
And then little snack bars all over the place. And that's a very cool place to go. If you're interested, they also have floor shows, kind of like Las Vegas type of floor shows.
Okay.
In some of the hotels, like the Nacional and the Parisienne. And there's another place called Florida. Florida, is it? I think so. So that's kind of like a Las Vegas. You go there, it's about $100 a night. You get dinner, but you got a hell of a floor show. With the feathers and the whole thing and acrobatics. It's interesting. I mentioned that, although Americans are not supposed to go there because it's government-owned, but I have a lot of readers from Canada and from everywhere, pretty much, in the world. So I always try to, when I'm giving talks like this, to differentiate. You know, you could go if you're Canadian. Don't think that, oh my
right.
God, I can't go.
You know, well, if you're Canadian, you can just get on a plane and go, and you have no particular restrictions in terms
none
of
whatsoever.
What you can do in Cuba, barring safety and common sense, but
correct.
We have a few more in the U.S. right now.
Right. Yes, we do. And what those are, for Americans that are listening and are interested, well, how exactly do I go there? There are 12 different categories that you can choose when you go to buy your airline ticket from, let's say, American Airlines. They'll give you a form, and the whole thing is done through the computer, and it says, you know, why are you going? And they give you 12 choices.
Right.
You're going to visit family, you're a journalist doing research, mm-hmm. you're a religious person meeting some church or whatever, a couple more, and then there's support for the Cuban people. That's what most people check off.
The people-to-people, yeah.
People-to-people is a little bit different from support from the Cuban people, but it's so minimal that it's not even worth discussing. You can go with support for the Cuban people. And what that means is that you have to stay in specific bed and breakfast places that are owned, that are run by the Cubans in their home. Like a lot of Cubans mm-hmm. will have an apartment, or they'll have a home and they'll have an extra room and they'll rent it out. So that's called a casa particular, or a self-owned house, to differentiate it from a government-run hotel or from a hotel. So that's where you stay. That's where Americans can stay. Anybody else can stay wherever they want. And also you should eat in what they call paladares, which restaurants that are privately owned. So private homes and private restaurants you can go to. And that counts for support for the Cuban people. Also, you're expected to interact with Cubans, for example, you know, hire a local tour guide, or, you know, go to a co-op of women doing silk screening, or visit an artisanal shop where they make little souvenirs, that sort of thing. What the U.S. government doesn't want you to do, and they specifically say that very clearly, is that you do not go to Cuba for tourism exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you going to take an afternoon and go to the beach? Yeah, sure. You know, is there anybody mm-hmm. from the U.S. government, you know, chasing you to, oh, you can't go to the beach? No, that's ridiculous. And the Cubans don't care. So as long as you are not blatant about something, mm-hmm. and you're fine. I mean, take salsa lessons, take Cuban cooking lessons, very interesting things to do. Take an architecture tour of Old Havana.
Mm-hmm.
That's mind-blowing, because the things that you'll see are just amazing.
So it sounds like the difference is that at one point you really kind of had to be on an organized tour.
Correct. Yeah.
And that was the people-to-people thing.
That was the people-to-people thing. They took that out. That is back now.
Okay.
It is back now. So
you can do that, but you do have other options.
But you can go.
Interesting.
You have to go with a group.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, if you check support for the Cuban people and you go by yourself, nobody's going to care. But you should not, because you don't have to. It's very easy to follow mm-hmm. the law. Just click off support for the Cuban people and, you know, do these things that I mentioned.
Okay.
And it's also nice if you can take down some little gifts. Things that you could bring down to Cuba that people would appreciate immensely are soap. Soap is a big thing. Spices, also very, very big thing. It's good for you to bring your own spices as well, if you like. There's a lack of spices in Cuba.
Well, and that actually gets to one of the questions I had. The first show we did on Cuba, it's been quite a while now. It's 13, 14 years ago.
Wow.
And things have probably changed a bit. And I recall that the joke at the time was, what were the first three victims of the revolution? And they were breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Because at the time, it was said if you wanted good Cuban food, you went to Florida, because they had trouble getting the right ingredients and the, you know, the whole process. You've talked about some nice restaurants and things like that. Has that situation improved? Is it going to be different if I'm eating in a family in a family-owned restaurant versus a government restaurant because I'm Canadian or something?
No, the food situation is pretty dire.
Okay, still. All right.
Yes, still. There are some restaurants.
Once you told me I was going to bring spices down, that was a sort of a clue there.
Yeah.
Okay.
The food is not well spiced, so
okay.
If you like that, you should bring your own. Yeah, there's a bunch of restaurants that are actually pretty good. I can name them off, you know. You want me to name them?
Get a couple names, sure.
Sure. One is Doña Eutenia. Doña, D-O-N-A. And the N has a little tilde on it. Eutemia, E-U-T-E-M-I-A. And that restaurant is in Cathedral Square.
Okay.
That's one. There is another one called Café Laurent, L-A-U-R-E-N-T. It's French, Laurent. And that you will find in a neighborhood called El Vedado, E-L, and then Vedado, V-E-D-A-D-O. There is another one called El Cocinero. And if you go to the FAC, the Cuban Art Factory, that restaurant is attached to that place. So okay. It's called El Cocinero. Cocinero is C-O-C-I-N-E-R-O. And the food there is pretty good.
And I'll put links to these in the show notes so that people don't have to be writing it down.
Right.
That's my job here.
All right. So, yeah, but the government is a government restaurant. There was absolutely no reason, no earthly reason for any non-Cuban to go into one of these places. Unless you're just curious about it.
Okay.
Or you're on a super, super budget. The food is very poor, very little selection. And you don't really have to because these paladares or private restaurants, there are plentiful in the city. And also, if you want a good meal at a very reasonable price in the private home that you're staying, they will generally, 99% of them, they will give you breakfast in the morning.
Okay.
That's about the equivalent of $5. But you can also ask them to make you lunch or dinner, or you can ask them to pack you a picnic lunch if you're going to go eat it at the park or you're going to go at the beach, that sort of thing. But that those are places where you can get good food. The paladares and the house where you're staying. And these private homes are called casas for short.
Okay.
So if you, somebody will ask you, hey, what casa do you... Oh, can you recommend a good casa? So you'll know what they're talking about.
Got it. What other things are we going to see while there? You mentioned the fortifications as being someplace both interesting and historically significant.
We are surrounding the city. Oh, one thing, another good thing that you could do, take the hop-on, hop-off bus.
Okay.
And you take that in Central Park, right in front of the Hotel Inglaterra. Inglaterra means England.
English, yeah.
In Spanish. So you're right there on that plaza. And you take it, I think it's $5. It takes about 2 hours to do the entire route.
Okay.
And they will take you throughout the city. And you'll stop at the fortifications. There are two big ones. I don't remember the name right now. But, I mean, just say the forts. Everybody knows. And they're very, very... They're also UNESCO World. The entire fortification system of Havana is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Let's see. Okay.
It looks like Fortaleza de la San Carlos de la Cabañas.
Let's see. Now, I can tell you about places where that the tour books mention, but I think that it could be a ripoff.
Okay.
I think people would be interested in that. One is a place called Fusterlandia. And this is an artist. I think his name is Jose Fuster. And he started creating mosaics and putting them, pasting them on different parts of his house, and that grew into his yard, and that spilled out into his street, and then he started doing it in his neighbors' houses, and there's this crazy mishmash of mosaics. I guess it's interesting to some people. I think that taking a car all the way over there to see a bunch of like broken up tiles, I don't find that very interesting.
It reminds me of the Watts Towers in Los Angeles. Interesting.
Watts Tower, I'm not familiar. Okay, another place that I think is a waste is Callejón de Hamel, which is Hamel Alley. That is a place that if you go on Sundays from at 12, sometimes at 12, sometimes at 1, you got to check. There is a very interesting dance performance of Santeria, the religion, that the Afro-Cuban religion.
Yeah.
That's interesting on a Sunday. Any other time, it's just not interesting. It's just a bunch of pictures up on the wall. And so I think that that's not worth a trip out there either. Also, Floridita is the oldest bar in Havana. And Ernest Hemingway used to drink daiquiris. Was it daiquiris? Yeah, he used to drink daiquiris there, like almost on a daily basis.
To be fair, I think Ernest Hemingway used to drink just about everywhere.
Just about everywhere, yes. And they say, some tour books, they say, oh, the daiquiri was invented there. It was not. It was invented in the town of Daiquiri, which is all the way on the other side of the island.
Got it.
But this is not a very interesting place to eat. I mean, if you want to go there, you want to have your...
Get a daiquiri.
Get your daiquiri, but then get out and then go find someplace else to eat. It's It's not worth your money. It's not good value for your money. It's okay. A tourist trap. Another one is La Bodeguita del Medio, which means the warehouse in the middle. The warehouse, okay. I guess they meant the warehouse in the middle of the street. Hemingway is said to have drunk mojitos there almost on a daily basis. And he did. He did go there. He also went to Floridita. But the food is not very good. It's ridiculously expensive. And you can have mojitos, you know. It's not even the mojitos are not good. You know what a mojito is? It's a Cuban
sure,
drink.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've had them in Miami.
And they're very tasty. But yep. To go there, that's another tourist trap. I mean, there's many other places that you can go to. They trade on the whole Hemingway thing, which, you know,
sure.
it's their shtick, and that's nice. But it's not worth your time and money. Let me see. What else can I tell you? What else do you think would be valuable?
The other question I had was the money situation, because there was always the confusion with Cuba with pesos versus convertible pesos. Is that still a thing?
No, that convertible pesos were eliminated, I believe, last June.
Oh, just that recently. Interesting.
Yeah, very, very recently.
Good. And so people who are listening don't pay any attention to what I just said.
No,
okay,
no,
good.
You're correct.
Good to know.
You asked if that situation still existed. Yeah. So,
right.
No, it does not. It did for, I think it was 30 years.
Oh, yeah,
20
I know.
Years for a long time. And unfortunately, I came back from Cuba with about 200 convertible pesos on me, thinking that, oh, you know, next time I go, you know, I'll bring. And then they said, oh, no, as of June 1st, you can't use these anymore. So it's like I'm sitting here on 200. The equivalent was a dollar to a convertible peso. So I'm sitting here with was once $200 worth of money, and now is worthless. So that to me was a big, very, very, very big and unpleasant surprise. But there you have it. There you have it. So right now it is the peso.
Okay.
It's the Cuban peso. And I guess I'll use the other things, the other convertible pesos, which I still have them. I'll use them as a souvenir. That's all that's worth it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been places that have had such runaway inflation that the old bills are just available as souvenirs.
Yeah, Zimbabwe.
Yeah, exactly. That was what I was thinking of. Exactly.
Yeah, right
so,
now,
yeah.
Venezuela.
Be glad if your currency doesn't become a souvenir. So, you mentioned that even if we are there and we're not doing touristy things, nobody's going to mind too much if we spend one afternoon at a playa over
that
at a beach.
That is correct.
Is there a particular one that you would send
yes.
us to?
Yes, there is Playas del Este.
Okay.
Those beaches, Les Playa del Este means beaches of the east. And these are about 20 to 40 minutes. It's a string of beaches. About 20
okay.
to 40 minutes outside to the east of Havana. You can get there by taking the hop-on, hop-off bus. They can leave you there. Get
okay.
off at the last stop, so that's just $5, you know, for the 2 hours, and you can
pretty
get
cheap.
On, and it's ridiculous. It's like it's the best value in Havana. You can get on and off whenever you want. You know, you can go and take the and spend some time at the beach there. The beaches are spectacular. The most beautiful beaches that I have ever seen. I've seen them in Cuba, and that's not because I'm Cuban. And I've seen a lot of beaches.
Okay.
It's very beautiful. Another nice place that you want to do on your day trip is go to a place called Valle de Viñales, which means Viñales Valley. Viñales is spelled V as in victory, I, N, that's the N with the little mm-hmm. dito on top of it, A-L-E-S, Valley of Viñales. And to me, I think that the most beautiful sight of nature that I have ever seen is the valley, the beautiful valley of Viñales. That is where the tobacco comes from, supposedly the best tobacco
okay.
in the world. So you take a day trip out there. It's about, you could take a day trip, but it's better to spend the night. You can get a casa there for like, you know, $25, $30 a night. And you can get a tour guide. They also have a hop-on, hop-off bus. You go there. It's about 3.5 hours away from Havana. And you spend a day visiting the tobacco plantations, horseback riding, picnicking. Something that's unique is to go on a boat on an underground river. I bet you've never done something like that.
I have been on an underground river, yes.
Oh.
I've also gone blackwater rafting in on an underground river where you get in a wetsuit and an inner tube in New Zealand.
All right. Well, yeah, this is then.
It's great fun as long as you're not really claustrophobic.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you can do this in Havana, in the Valle of Viñales.
Well, and this is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And
Viñales, yes.
As I look at pictures of it, it's really funny. We just did an episode, as people are listening to this, about northern Vietnam, Ha Long Bay and some other sites
with the
limestone cliffs. And this is the same thing. I mean, it's a very similar kind of, except that instead of rice terraces, we get tobacco. So very interesting. I don't know this before.
The cliffs, they're called mogotes.
Okay.
Mogotes, M-O-G-O-T-E-S, Mogotes. And there's also a very lively street, a main street that once you've gone horseback riding and you've hiked, beautiful hiking, and you can rent a guide, you can rent a bicycle. And then you just can hang out on Cisneros Street, which is the main drag, and there's restaurants and nightclubs and music venues on either side. And it's just a lot of fun to just walk in and out of the different bars and have something to eat here and have a snack there, then listen to this music venue, go dancing over there. Something that's very, very big in Cuba is open-air nightclubs. The musicians, as I mentioned, these are world-class musicians. This is not the street musician that you see sometimes in the United States. I mean, these people would be playing in the Philharmonicas, and they're just extremely talented. And you can go in and out of all of these different clubs listening to them and dance the night away.
Interesting. You know, one thing that a friend of mine, Jen Leo, who was a co-host with me for 10 years on This Week in Travel, did in Cuba that, you know, I don't get jealous of other people's travel that often, but she did a baseball tour of Cuba. Talk about world-class talent down. That is something, one of these days when I get to Cuba, I'd love to take in a baseball game. Is that something that I can do near Havana?
Yes. Yes, you can do that. You can do that. As a matter of fact, that just yesterday we were looking at pictures of my husband when he went. He's a big fan.
Yep.
He was like in the opening of the baseball game. So yeah, you can do that. You can also see a boxing match.
Okay, so, sure. They were well known for years.
Also well known boxers. Yeah.
Exactly. Interesting. The Havana Sugar Kings. I see. Okay. Excellent. Anything else we want to tell people when they go down to Cuba, to Havana?
You will get a lot of people coming up to you and saying, which everybody that travels is going to relate to this, like, where are you from?
Okay. Sure.
A lot of that. So just, you know, if you want to tell them and you want to engage, you know, that's fine. But sometimes they will, what they're after is money. So be careful with that. You know, just use your own common sense. On the other hand, there are a lot of people that want to practice their English.
Sure.
And they're just, you know, lovely people that are open and engaging and want to practice their English. And that's a lot of a fun thing to do. Every night on 23rd Street and the 23rd Street that I mentioned, anybody says 23rd Street in Havana, they know what you're talking about. It's like Fifth Avenue in New York City. 23rd Street and the water, it ends at the water, right by the seawall. Right there is a gathering point. Every night people get together there, they listen to music. It's just this impromptu thing. People will just start conversations with you. There are vendors, you can have a snack there. It's just a really interesting place to hang out. And there's no air conditioning in a lot of people's homes.
Sure.
So what people do is they go out by the seawall, which is referred to as Havana's living room. So yeah, they'll hang out there. That's a very nice thing to do if you're looking for something very different. Also, internet is very spotty. In some places, it's non-existent. So what you do is that you'll get a card, about $1. You can get that at places where, at the telecommunications offices throughout Cuba, which are called Etexa. So you go there, you stand on line. Everything is a line in Cuba. You stand there,
okay.
You get your card, and you put in your number on your phone, and you get an hour. You have to find a Wi-Fi area, which is all over the place. Wherever you see a bunch of Cubans gathered in a group looking down at their phones, that's a Wi-Fi place.
Okay.
Also, you can go to hotels, and hotel lobbies are also Wi-Fi places.
Hmm.
But there you have to buy something. And you put in your number, and you've got Wi-Fi for an hour. You can also buy them in increments of $5. But I found that sometimes if you buy them in increments of $5 and you use like 90 minutes, that it's difficult to get back on again. So okay. I'd buy five separate $1 cards.
Got it.
And just use that. So those are things to remember. If at all possible, if you can make it out to the eastern to the eastern regions of Santiago, the second biggest city, second mm-hmm. most important city of Havana, the town of Baracoa, which I mentioned was a big chocolate producing, which is in the center of Cuba. That's a very interesting town, which was founded by French people from Louisiana and from, I forgot, a place in France. So okay. you see the French influence in the architecture.
Wait, now I think you're starting to do another episode on Cuba, so we may have to have back, Talek, and talk to us more about Cuba. There is more to see than just Havana,
yes,
as you told us in the beginning. As we start to wrap this up, you are standing in the prettiest spot in Havana. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Havana. That is another hour. But if I have to say, I am standing in the rooftop bar of the Packard Hotel, looking
okay.
out over the water.
Okay.
Well, over you didn't... their infinity pool.
And is the Packard Hotel not one of the ones I can stay at as an American? But I...
You cannot stay there as an American.
Okay, excellent.
But you can certainly go up in the elevator and look
exactly.
at the view.
Excellent. And one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Havana.
I don't know if it makes me laugh, but some of the things make me sad and I say only in Havana. It makes me laugh. Oh, the dogs in many of the plazas mm-hmm. have little name tags. The stray dogs, they have name tags. And they all belong to a particular office or a particular store or a particular museum. And they have little name tags on, hi, my name is Carmelita. Be nice to me. You know, I think that's sweet and funny. And I've never seen that anywhere else.
That is funny. I have not either. And if you had to summarize Havana in just three words, what three words would you pick?
Colonial, magical, musical.
Excellent, excellent. Well, and Talek, we didn't mention, but if people are interested, you also do tours, I understand, in
yes,
Cuba.
Yes, they were on hiatus for 2.5 years.
Yeah, I wonder why.
I'm restarting them, so if you're interested, just go to my website, www.travelswithtalek.com. And you'll see some of the older tours, and it's going to be similar.
And so you do tours of Havana and also elsewhere in Cuba?
That's correct, yes.
Excellent.
And what people can do is subscribe to my website, and then they will be alerted as to when the new
sure.
tours are out. Now, right now, we do have a tour, not to Havana, we have a tour to Spain in September. September 21st is going to the north of Spain, starting in Barcelona, ending in Santiago de Compostela. If people are interested in that, I have two spaces left.
All right. And then if we wanted to send people to the best post you have on travelswithtalek.com about Havana, where are we going to send them?
Go to 10 do's and don'ts in Havana.
10 do's and don'ts. Oh, well, that actually sounds very interesting because now I want to know what the don'ts are, and we'll go send people to that website to look it up. Talek, thank you so much for coming back on Amateur
thank
Traveler
you.
And sharing with us your love for Havana.
Thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed chatting with you as well, and talk to you soon. Thank you.
As we're 1 week away from the 17th anniversary of Amateur Traveler, a special thanks to patrons of the show who help support the show financially. Patrons of the show get an ad-free version, a monthly Zoom call, and various other tchotchkes, depending on what level they subscribe at, and you can find out more by going to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I will say that I took a week off here because I was doing some travel, and it has been a week. It has been an interesting year so far. I think I may or may not have said on the show that I'm going to be a grandfather in September. My 6-person startup company got acquired by American Express right now. My 94-year-old mother's getting over pneumonia. My 95-year-old father has COVID. My daughter-in-law has COVID. My daughter's buying a house that we're trying to help them with. And it's just been a week. And I find that when I get away from podcasting for even just 1 week, as I did last week, it is hard to get started again. As I come up on the 17th anniversary of the show, I am reminded it's a lot of work. So thank you for those of you who've stuck with me for most or all of 17 years. And thank you for all of you who listen to the show and tell your friends. And for those who let me know that you're using the show to actually plan your travels, because that gives me some encouragement. I have some feedback on the show. I think I'm just going to wait until next week to play that. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. Or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.